Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Christopher Kennahan Jr. was recorded with his secretary asking her not to book him into the Hilton Hotel because he didn't like the bed sheets. You talk about Shovel being a failure, they didn't end up in prison, but it still did give the authorities a picture of how this gang were operating, their business interests overseas, and the various roles that individuals such as Daniel Kennahan and Gary Hutch played within the organisation.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe. In 2010, Spanish police announced that they had dismantled the Irish Mafia by shutting down the Kinahan Organised Crime Group. Headed by Christopher Kinahan Sr. and managed by his sons Daniel and Christopher Jr., the so-called cartel was estimated then to be worth 100 million euro when it was hit with the killer blow by cops who'd spent 2 years wiretapping the gang and keeping them under close surveillance. But the scenario sounds all too familiar, and 12 years on, the Kinahans are not only still in business, but 10 times bigger than they ever were. So what went wrong with Operation Shovel? Today, I'm joined by journalist and author Stephen Breen, whose book The Cartel details the surveillance and wiretap probe by the Spanish, which failed to take the head from the snake. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. I'm always surprised, Stephen, when I see Europol referring in reports to Operation Shovel and, you know, maybe sometimes citing it. I was on the website one day and I saw it cited as one of their sort of success stories nearly for the merging of intelligence and information. But we maybe wouldn't see it like that as being a success, but we'll come back to that. And before we do, maybe tell us, first of all, what was Operation Shovel?
Well, Operation Shovel, Nicola, was the culmination of a meeting that took place in The Hague in Holland involving members of the Gardaí, the Spanish police, the Dutch police, and also Europol. And I think that meeting was arranged, initiated by the Spanish police in conjunction with the Gardaí to try and come up with a plan, a strategy, with the ultimate aim of dismantling the Kinahan Organised Crime Group. And I think the meeting was called and the meeting was arranged because by that stage in 2008, the Kinahan gang had grown so strong in southern Spain, and the Spanish realised that, you know, they weren't just dealing with, you know, a number of local criminals from Ireland who'd come over there and were dealing in small shipments of drugs. They were dealing with an organisation that was engaged in arms trafficking, huge amounts of drug shipments, but also had consolidated such a strong power base there and had built up such strong contacts with, you know, Moroccan criminals, Dutch criminals, and many of Europe's leading criminals at that time. But I think For the Spanish, it was important because at that stage, Paddy Doyle had been murdered in Spain, and that was bad for tourism in Spain. So it was. So at the same time as the Spanish were looking at these murders taking place on their soil, you know, who was responsible, and looking at the gang responsible, i.e. the Kinahan cartel and what they were engaged in. And at that time, they had even placed the Kinahan cartel and ascertained their threat as being as serious as the Basque separatist group ETA because of the murders that were taking place and because of the arms shipments and the drugs that they were involved in. So they saw the Kinahan gang as posing a real threat to the security of the Spanish state. So that's why, because of who they were dealing with, that's why it was important to have the Irish authorities involved and the Dutch authorities and Europol. And it was about taking action against a particular group who they see had posed a massive threat, and something had to be done about it. So that's why Operation Shovel came into being.
It's incredible. And I suppose at the heart of that, what they saw and identified was this complex corporate structure, which, you know, all these years later, we're still talking about. But anyway, to set the scene of 2008, in the Costa del crime, for decades criminals had been going down there settling. It is being described as a melting pot of organized crime. You can do any bit of business you want down there. There was the Sun. There was the original kind of reasons given that there was no extradition treaty with the UK, so the Brits quite liked it. But you know, there was pretty serious criminals down there. And how established by 2008 were the Kinahan organisation, and how long had they been there?
I think the Spanish investigation, when that started in 2008, Operation Shovel, the nature of that investigation involved surveillance and a huge, massive investigation targeting those senior players within the Kinahan organisation who they had identified as being involved in the key structures of the Kinahan organisation. And the structures they identified were arms trafficking, drug shipments and money laundering. And it was important for the Spanish to build up an intelligence profile. And they pumped in huge amounts of resources into the organisation. They identified the key members such as Christy Kinahan Sr., Daniel Kinahan, people like Freddie Thompson, Gary Hutch, but also their associates in broader criminal networks. And by that stage, I think the Spanish were amazed at the level of organisation involved in running this huge cartel. And I think the surveillance operation that they initiated gave them a huge insight into what they were dealing with. It wasn't just, you know, an Irish criminal gang. It was an Irish criminal gang who had extensive networks and contacts with other major criminals from Russia, from Holland, from Morocco. So, and it was about identifying those structures and their contacts and trying to dismantle those. But if you look back at the surveillance, and especially in terms of their money laundering exercise and their money laundering endeavours, you know, they were able to establish how, you know, they had built up this huge portfolio of properties in Brazil. I think it also gave us an insight into Christy Kinahan and his business model and what he was trying to adopt. We're trying to create this huge organisation that could obviously launder the proceeds from drugs. And that included, for example, Christy Kinahan looking to China, looking to Cyprus, Liechtenstein, you know, trying to import cement, trying to import chicken feet because he saw a gap in the market. And it was all about profit, and even trying to get involved in humanitarian charities as well, and about building up this huge business empire. And I think the Spanish were staggered by the level of sophistication that was involved, the level of their global contacts, especially in terms of the money laundering networks that they had, as I said, in Brazil, looking to do business in China, looking to get involved, for example, in a motorway enterprise in Libya. So it was just about a global enterprise and what they were trying to achieve. And that was about the Spanish then trying to identify what the cartel were involved in, but also trying to stop the flow of money that was coming in because of their extensive drugs network at the time.
So by that time, when they get the window into the Kinahan operation, it is as sophisticated as you can get, really, for an organised crime gang. And how long did they believe it took for them to create that? Because we sort of talk about the turn of the century, 2000. We kind of know where the Kinahans are up until that point, and then we can kind of place them down in Spain around 2000 and 2001 sort of timeline. But that's really only a very short period of time that operation grew to that extent.
It's a very short period of time, but it shows you the level of commitment that Christy Kinahan put in to building up this huge criminal empire. And it showed the contacts that he had across the globe that enabled him to build up this empire. Obviously, he was joined in southern Spain with his sons and other members of the criminal gang. So it showed that they had built up this huge, extensive network, which primarily was involved in drug smuggling and also bringing weapons into Spain before going to the UK and Ireland. And even if you look back at 2006 and 2007, when the British well-known drug dealer James Mulvey was implicated in masterminding over £60 million worth of drugs into the UK at that time, Thomas Bomber Kavanagh was also named in the indictment by the National Crime Agency in the UK. So that goes back to 2006, 2007. Ultimately, there wasn't enough evidence to bring charges against Kavanagh. And indeed, Hatchett Kavanagh, his cousin, Jared Kavanagh, in that investigation. But it showed at that time how big the cartel were, the contacts that they had across Europe and especially in the UK. But when I was just looking at the Spanish investigation file the other day, and I was just going over some of the excerpts of the surveillance that the Spanish had at the time. And because even within a short period of time, say 5 or 6, 7 years, because the cartel had become so big, I mean, they were engaged in counter-surveillance. They were at one stage plotting to disrupt and dismantle the network of towers that went along the Spanish coastline, which intercepted shipments of coming into drugs. They were looking at cybercrime at that stage. So it was such a huge enterprise, and it seemed to have built up from going from the inner city in Dublin, going to Europe, and within a short period of time, it had become a major power player within the global drugs trade. It was extraordinary.
And of course, there's all sorts of reasons there as well going on in the background why that happens. And I think, amongst many things is the demise of Curtis Warren, of course, and he was captured and placed in jail. And I think Christy Kinahan Sr. is a bit of an opportunist. He initially moves in on Larry Dunn's territory here in Dublin, and, you know, he's there ready, waiting in the wings to sort of take that over. And, later on the continent, he probably does the same with Curtis Warren. But, you know, there's many other reasons that we will never know behind that as well, where the investment money had come from. Had he used his corporate expertise maybe to invest funds that, because look, the more you can invest, the more you can make. Isn't that the case in this and any business? But I just wanted to ask you, so when Operation Shovel, so there was the meeting in Europol, it was decided that everybody, including our own guard, Shikona, would work together. No doubt the guards were at that point delighted because they'd never really been able to get a multitasked agency against any Irish targets on the Costa. They were always seen as too much small fry. Even John Gilligan, I don't think they got a huge amount of help from the Spanish at the time. But it gets going. And is it mainly, like, how do they actually do it? Are you talking about officers in cars watching these guys? Or there's definitely the wiretap, which is probably the most interesting part of it.
Yeah, I think the wiretap was a very important part of it. And when they were monitoring their phones, when they started that in February in 2008, and even after the murder of Patrick Doyle, the Spanish had said that the violent character of the organisation is evident, and they've been linked to 6 murders, and including, you go back to Holland as well, so that's why the Dutch were involved when Simon Cowmeadow was murdered in February 2007. So that showed you how other police agencies were concerned about the rise of the Kinahan cartel. And then I think when it comes to Operation Shovel, it started, the meeting takes place, the Spanish agreed to set up this huge surveillance operation. It did involve the tapping of phones. It did involve them identifying key players within the organisation, but it also involved surveillance as well. But the Spanish also noted in their reports that the cartel had also engaged in counter-surveillance measures, and they also gleaned information from the wiretaps which suggested that there may have been some corrupt Spanish police officers on the payroll of the cartel. And indeed, as part of their surveillance operation, the Spanish were also able to ascertain that the cartel were also using automatic number plate recognition systems so they could see that if there were any state cars within the vicinity of where they were socializing or where they were spending their time, they would know that they belonged to the authorities. So it was a game of cat and mouse where you had the full resource of the Spanish state, you know, watching their every move, building up this intelligence profile, this picture. But also you had an organization such as the Kinahan organization engaging in counter-surveillance, but also at the same time, the Spanish were able to ascertain how they were undergoing weapons training, how they were undergoing bodyguard training. So they were well equipped and well resourced and well organized, but it needed, that was 2 years of the Spanish, you know, watching their every move. And I think once they had built up the profile and the picture of what they were involved in, that's when they decided to move against them. But when you look at that file, it's 20,000 pages. So much information within that file, you know, relating to the activities of the cartel. But ultimately, you talk about Shovel being a failure. They didn't end up in prison, but it still did give the authorities a picture of how this gang were operating, their business interests overseas, and the various roles that individuals such as Daniel Kinahan and Gary Hutch played within the organisation.
And was there conversations actually overheard, maybe from Christy Kinahan Sr. himself? Was he on the phone? Was he recorded?
Christy Kinahan was recorded. There was one time I recall where Christy Kinahan had come from on a flight from Hong Kong to Madrid, and he was on the phone speaking to his son Christopher Jr., asking if Gary Hutch could go and collect him at Spanish airport at Madrid airport. So that was quite a long journey from southern Spain, the Costa del Sol, 5 or 6 hour car journey to Madrid. But you know, Christy Kinahan held those below him, if they weren't his sons, with such contempt that he just left. So Hutch drove up there and then came back without Kinahan being there. There were other times where Christy Kinahan was recorded on the phone, primarily just talking about his business interests, but you had other people such as Gary Hutch and Freddie Thompson talking about going to see prostitutes, going for a night out, talking about computers and laptops, which the Spanish police believed were code words for guns. You had one stage where Freddie Thompson obviously wasn't the brightest compared to some of his contemporaries, talking about a pistol being delivered and how it would spit out the bullet, and then Hutch would immediately say, hang up. But the wiretaps also give an insight into their paranoia as well. When Eamon Dunn was murdered, you had Daniel Kinahan on the phone to his mother back in Ireland saying, that wasn't us. There was another time when there was a seizure, when he was talking about his father, when his mother said, was that your father? Was he responsible for that? And Daniel Kinahan said, ah, sure, ma, you know what he's like. So it gave an insight into their behaviour. But also, when you talk about Daniel Kinahan, you know, he also held his contemporaries with contempt as well, where there was one individual where he asked this individual to check up on his mother in Dublin. This individual didn't do that, and Kinahan said, you do what I tell you, don't let it happen again. So there was a menacing and a threatening element to his conversations as well, but I think they did give a good insight into their behaviour and the sort of life that they were leading in Spain.
And you see, when you talk about that, they talked about bringing down those towers along the coastline. There was also some sort of a suggestion that they spoke about maybe cutting out some middlemen and bringing in shipments.
Again, they were on the wiretaps as well, but it was all codes that they were using for different aspects of their criminal enterprises. Drugs and guns were all used in different codes, but it was about consolidating their own power base there, and how there were certain conversations there where Daniel Kinahan would give his instructions and telling people quite specifically how he wanted certain things to be done. They go back to the gym as well. They were running the old pub too, about going to meeting places there. Daniel was also recorded with his secretary as well, arranging business deals. Christopher Kinahan Jr. was recorded with his secretary asking her not to book him into the Hilton Hotel because he didn't like the bed sheets. So, and then him being able to go and access 10 grand because his father wanted some expenses because he was flying to Brazil. So it really did expose their lavish lifestyle that they were leading. But also they talked about they were in total control. They had total responsibility for the structure and the organization of their criminal enterprises, and any other middlemen or anybody else weren't to be counted. It was just their way or the highway.
Mm. So it was obviously, and then we had the other, I mean, there was financial documents being, searches being done, and there was, you know, obviously the swapping of intelligence between the UK, Ireland, the Netherlands, and anybody else who was involved with it. But they chose, I think, May of 2010 to kick in the doors as such. There is always a moment in an investigation where it's decided, right, they move in now. In this case, did they believe they had enough from these wiretaps and from the surveillance?
Well, at that stage, yes, by that stage, it had been going on for 2 years. Also, at the same time in Ireland, there was an operation called Operation GoldenEye, which was targeting members of the Kinahan organisation in the South Inner City. They had huge successes there where drugs were recovered, Ingram machine guns were recovered as well. But because of the recession kicked in Ireland at that stage then, so that operation was stood down. And I think by 2010, the Spanish had been doing this for 2 years. A huge cost to the Spanish Exchequer. They had built up this huge profile, this huge picture of the nature and the structure of the criminal organisation. So I think at that time, the Spanish believed that they had enough evidence. And their three main areas were drugs trafficking, weapons trafficking, and money laundering. So they believed, because of the extensive nature of their surveillance operation, because of what they had built up, all their recordings put together in a file, that there was enough evidence to charge these individuals and those at the top of the organisation, because when they were doing their research and when they were doing their surveillance operation, they had identified as Daniel having the controller and manager of the organisation, Christy Kinahan Junior being responsible for money laundering, and people like Gary Hutch, who they claimed had equal status as Daniel Kinahan, but was responsible for arms trafficking and drugs as well, and people like Freddie Thompson, who also had responsibility for arms and drugs. So they had built up that picture, they had compiled this evidence, and that's when they decided to make their move in a very high profile show of strength against the organisation. You remember it, Nicola, you were out there, and it was a huge day when they moved in. We remember Christy Kinahan lying on his boxer shorts and in handcuffs, them all being led away, and senior members of the organisation, and certainly it caused disruption. But was it enough in the end to bring charges? No, it wasn't.
Yeah, and for many reasons. I suppose back then we were, you know, there was arrests in a number of countries. I think there was 35 arrested altogether, many of whom certainly we weren't aware of. A lot of them were involved in the sort of, or were suspected rather, of being involved in the money laundering end of it. Some of them, people who were arrested were very much, you know, seen as legitimate business people. All those documents relating to Brazil and the plans to build a huge big complex out there were seized. And I think most importantly, the Spanish police came forward and not only said that they'd shut down the Kinahan organisation, but they referred to them as the Irish Mafia, and said they had a mafia-like structure. But it was a day of sort of, it certainly didn't seem to be a day or a time that was going to go pear-shaped. It looked, everything looked good for the goodies as such. The Kinahan, Christy Kinahan Sr. and his two sons, amongst others, were placed in jail, and the investigation files from the police were handed over to a magistrate, as is the way it's done in Spain. And the time kind of went by then, and slowly but surely, they got bail.
And that was it. You look at 2010 when this happened. Obviously, there's a huge interest in this case at the time. You know, it makes headlines across Europe, and as you say, you're dealing with the Irish Mafia, and because I think they had to be seen to be doing something because of the nature of their investigation over the previous 2 years. But then after that, obviously there must have been some form of disruption to the organised crime group. But within a couple of months, you know, people are asking questions. Why is no one appearing before the court? I know in Spain it's a long drawn out process, and it could have been a number of years down the line. But within 2 years, you have Daniel Kinahan opening the MGM gym in Marbella. And it appears to be business as usual. Things are going well for them. They're out and about. They're living there. But then, obviously, a few years after that, things start to go wrong when the fallout with Gary Hutch within members of the gang.
Well, they start to go wrong because they fall out themselves. They don't start to go wrong really at that second point because of a law enforcement reason. They implode, as many big groups like that do. But while it was continuing on in the background, the case, and, you know, we were being told, yes, it's still under investigation. They got out, as you say, 2012, Daniel opens the MGM gym. I think Christy Kinahan Sr. goes in and out of jail in Belgium on charges relating to the corruption of very senior police officers in Belgium, which is very significant. But by 2014, just 4 years on, we're told that the drug and criminal charges, essentially, those more significant charges, the drugs and weapons charges, are being dropped, and that the magistrate is now, in 2014, focusing solely on money laundering. So that was a big blow, I think, to law enforcement everywhere. And I think probably those who were actually seriously working around organised crime realised this was not going in the right direction. And obviously that, you know, failure of this investigation empowered the Kinahans even more.
I think it did. I think you're 100% right there. In 2014, obviously, it had been 4 years since Operation Shovel. But when they were under investigation, it may have disrupted their activities. But by 2014, they're still a huge criminal organisation. They are still actively involved in very serious crime, such as murder, such as drugs, and such as weapons smuggling. And you look at 2014 as well. It's the same year in which Hatchet Kavanagh is shot dead in Spain. So here we have the Kinahan cartel, 6 years after the murder of Paddy Downe in Spain, still killing people on Spanish soil. So ultimately, the overall objective of that investigation on Spanish soil was to bring serious charges against those at the upper echelons of the Kinahan organisation. That didn't happen, and it was a failure, as you say, because it resulted in the Kinahan gang becoming even stronger, extending their networks of contacts overseas and building this huge criminal organisation. And we saw what that organisation meant 2 years after the attempted shooting of Daniel Kinahan in 2014, when they caused so much misery on the streets of Ireland with the feud. And I think it's important to point out that when you look back at Operation Shovel, obviously it did provide a picture of the cartel's money laundering networks, the huge organisation that they had built up within a very short space of time. But the same sort of space of time, it had got even stronger after Shovel up until 2016.
But when you think about that, even though even then in 2014, okay, they've dropped the crime, the drug and weapons importation charges, but our investigation rather. But they are still named and shamed, all these people. They have still been wheeled out in front of the international media. They have been called the Irish Mafia, and they are still carrying on business completely regardless. It's quite an extraordinary situation, really. It just shows the arrogance, the confidence, and the fact that they are untouchable.
I think what you just said there, Nicola, about the arrogance, yeah, is definitely a term I would use, because I think when they were in Spain for so long, and by 2014, so they're there for a very long time, they had built up such a strong power base. They did feel they were untouchable because obviously the full weight of the Spanish state had come to bear down on them. That wasn't a success. So if they could survive that and they could consolidate their position within the realms of organised crime across Europe, if they could build on that, which they did do, and you look at the resources at their disposal, the property empires overseas, the money going through accounts in Panama, Liechtenstein, Switzerland, Cyprus, you know, it was just extraordinary. And I think there was an arrogance there that they are in southern Spain, they are quite strong, even though they have been exposed as the Irish Mafia, even though they're aware that, you know, there are certain investigations ongoing, they're still willing to go out and kill people like Hatchet Kavanagh and Gary Hutch in 2015. So there was an arrogance there, there was certainly an ego there that they had become such a huge organisation that they weren't going to let that empire crumble by the work of the authorities, regardless of who they're from, if it was from Spain or from Ireland or indeed across Europe.
And of course, that would also impinge on anybody who was ever considering to deflect from the organisation, that, you know, they would always have been told by the top echelons that nobody can touch us and we are, you know, all powerful. And of course, that's no longer, you're just being told, that is the reality. that is actual, that is the absolute reality of this organisation that you may be working with, you may be reluctantly involved in, be it from a business point of view, or you're doing, you know, other jobs for them that you maybe didn't kind of go out, set out in life to do. But you are not only being told this, but this is real life. These people are untouchable. And, you know, in many ways, I think Operation Shovel, there's many reasons for it. I do recall speaking to somebody in regards to how it was, how those May raids were announced. I've always been of the opinion that the Kinahans knew they were under surveillance. How do you feel about that? I think I would be of the belief that they had a number of Spanish police on the payroll.
Yeah, I think Christy Kinnan was just too clever to not be aware that he would have been under any type of surveillance. Obviously, they did talk on the phone because of their business interests, but it was always in code. They would never talk about anything specific. You know, and it was always, I'll meet you at such and such a spot, or I'll meet you somewhere else. You know, it wasn't very clear. So it would be hard to gather some evidence from the wiretaps that were that they were listening into. So, but also Christy Kinnan as well, as I say, it did give an insight into his behaviour, but he was someone who was very cautious. There was one occasion where he had gone to Madrid airport, and he had walked into one hotel and then he'd walked into another hotel, and he was concerned that he may have been followed. So he waited at one hotel for 10 hours and missed his flight just because of the concern that he may have been followed. And he would always issue these instructions, as Daniel did. And there was one occasion where an individual didn't take part in the anti-surveillance training that they were participating in, and Daniel went furious that, you know, they weren't taking this thing seriously. It had to be done. So I've no doubt in my mind that they had and were aware that they were under surveillance. But in terms of the Spanish police working for them, Gary Hutch was indeed recorded in one telephone call saying to someone else that, don't worry, if I'm stopped in the car, that they have someone on the payroll there. So he said that they know one local cop on the Costa del Sol, and he can look after us. So I've no doubt, because the money that those Spanish police were getting, it wasn't very much, and it had families to feed, and they were open to corruption, and they were open to being exploited by and manipulated by the Kinahan gang because of the resources that they had at their disposal.
Yeah, I think unfortunately no legitimate pay will ever match what these drug dealers, when we look now at, I mean, I think back in 2010 when Shovel was announced, they were described as being worth 100 million from memory. And that was the estimated value of the organisation. And, you know, 10 years on, as the sanctions in Dublin are announced, they're worth 1 billion.
But even at that time, the property empire in Brazil was rumoured to be around 500 million. And Christy Kinnan was also talking about dealing in cement. So he could bring in cement for, say, 55 per ton, and then sell it on for 97 per ton. So they were making huge money. So they were, again, it was all about exploiting issues in the markets there, trade deals that they could hopefully get involved in, and just looking for opportunities like any legitimate businessman would do. And, you know, the wiretaps also outlined how Christy Kinnan would be a regular reader of the Financial Times. And so after reading an article in the Financial Times, he wanted to move into the sugar business because he thought that was something where they could make a lot of money. And it was all about money and profit.
And out of the wiretaps, from having read them, did you, you know, can you get any little sense of the personalities, I suppose? Not maybe the where people sit in the organisation, but was there anything personal that came out about Christy Senior? Is he speaking to the partner, or is he speaking with any affection maybe to his sons outside of business?
No, for me, looking back on those wiretaps, Christy Kinahan Senior was the godfather. It was business for him. There was nothing else. There were orders he would be issuing to other people. I think he held people in contempt other than those of his two sons. I think Daniel's arrogance came across in the wiretaps. I think the power had perhaps gone to his head because he was de facto, you know, running the operation if his father was overseas or away on business. There was definitely an ego there with Daniel Kinahan. Christopher Kinahan Jr. was very quiet, didn't have the same personality as his older brother. And I think Daniel was keen to promote his authority and, you know, but also in a threatening manner as well by issuing these instructions and telling people they had to do it. As I said, it was his way or no way at all. In the exchanges between Freddie Thompson and Gary Hutch, you see two close friends who had a close bond. Their main priorities were talking about where they were going to have a drink, where they were going to have a joint, and even unusual conversations about back home, like Boyzone and Jedward. So it would go from talking about computers, i.e. or laptops, weapons being brought in, to Jedward and to home, and talking about football and different things like that. So very rarely, you know, they would talk about a business. Well, Daniel Kinnan did talk about the murder of Eamon Dunn and denied being involved in that. So that was the rare occasion.
Well, Freddie and Gary Hutch sound more normal, really, in one way. And it's always struck me that maybe Christy Kinnahan Sr., that maybe his addiction is the business, is the, you know, getting one over and growing it. And he has continued to show that was the case. But I think it's been a fascinating time in the emergence of the Kinnahan organised crime group, now the Kinnahan Trans Global organised crime group. If they go on any longer, the name will be so long, we'll just have to literally use an abbreviation. But all of those wiretaps and the growth of that organisation from around the turn of the century to 2010, when Shovel attempted at least to bring them down, is in your book, The Cartel. One to dust down and have another look at now that they're all back in the news and they're all so much of interest to everybody again. Is it, are you going to update that or?
No plans at the moment, Nicola. As I say, because it does go back, it does chart the whole story from the origins that the organisation that Christy Kinnahan had built up into 2017. And then there was an update in 2018. You know, a lot has happened since then. Your own book has come out about the boxing world and the role that it's played within the organisation. And here we are in 2022 now talking about the American authorities now have the Kinnahans in their sights. I did when I was writing this book and with my colleague Owen Conlon in 2017, I didn't think for a second that we'd be here in 2022 talking about a $5 million reward for information leading to their arrest. So it is intriguing, but it does give a picture of the growth at what they built up to ultimately become this global organised crime group.
And in a way, there's such an enormous story around it. There will never be, I don't believe, one as big as the Kinnahans, the emergence of them, their rise and you know, their current fall. But, you know, each part of that story has to come to an end at some stage, or else you'd be writing for the rest of your days and you'd have a tome not unlike The Godfather. So, Stephen Breen, thanks very much.
Thank you, Nicola.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. If you like the podcast and love true crime, why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.